Hello, everyone. So today I want to talk a lot about Inkscape extensions, and that's taking Inkscape and making a little bit more out of it. And what we tried to do with Inkscape is make this a very easy way for developers to come onto the project and make Inkscape better. So I want to talk a little bit about how to make extensions and how the extensions exist in Inkscape, but I also want to make each of you have the ability and the basis to contribute extensions back, because that's what makes our community is contributions. And not everybody has the time to learn all of the Inkscape code base. It's a little bit large, but what we want to do is provide an interface you can learn easily and provide contributions quickly. So I'm going to go through the extension architecture, talk about how we define extensions, which is called an INX file. It's an XML file. Talked about the scripting interface, which is probably the easiest interface to start with when building a Inkscape extension. Talk a little bit about the community and then pull it all together. When we started Inkscape, it was about 3 years ago, we had a long email explaining what we were trying to do. And one of the things is we listed our goals. And when we listed our goals for Inkscape, one of the things we wanted to emphasize was that we're going to have a small core, and then we're going to make that extensible so that people don't have to learn the core. But that it also means that we can load those options dynamically, so not everybody has to have this whole large program when they only use a very small portion. And a term that we've used other places is called first-class extensions. We want the user of Inkscape to not understand what they're using. Are they using the core? Are they using an extension? It doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter to the user. So we are trying to create an interface that hides how it's getting done from the user and just provide them features. Because the users don't care about the coolest language that you're using to develop the software. What they really care about is, can the feature work for me? And so that's one of our goals with Inkscape from the very beginning. Now, I put some screenshots in here to get you a little bit excited about using Inkscape and some of the things we can do. This is an example of some fine art that was done for the most recent release, 4.5. It's a car, and you can see it uses our new blur feature. Here's an example from John Coswell, who does comics in Inkscape. And here's a little flow where he talks about how he does the comics in Inkscape. He actually draws them by hand first, then he traces over them, kind of inking them in a traditional process, and then adds the color and the blurs and the effects and the text. And at the end, he comes up and does his comic entirely in Inkscape. Another good example of Inkscape is the Open ClipArt Library. The Open ClipArt Library is a collection of over 6,000 images. They're actually getting closer to 8,000 now. They're all SVG. They're all public domain. So you can use them for basically anything you want. If you want to use them for a commercial purpose, you can. It's public domain. If you want to use them for an open source purchase, what? Open source? So, open source purpose, then you can use them for that too. At the end of the day, you can use them for anything you want. And so that's really neat. And actually, a large portion of the clip art in the Open Clip Art Library has been done with Inkscape, which is something we're pretty proud of. And that's one of the reasons we started the project, is to show off Inkscape. So I can't talk about Inkscape in the extensions interface without first at least talking about the core format of Inkscape, which is SVG. SVG is an XML format. And what it does is it provides a text-based way to represent graphics. The standard's built by the W3C, which is the World Wide Web Consortium, the guys who do HTML, and it's at the core of Inkscape. It's a pretty simple format, and I just wanted to show a little example of it here. What you can see is we've got SVG on the left, the text, that's creating this green box on the right. You can see that there's a rectangle command, then the parameters in the green are the width, height, the X position, the Y position, and then standard CSS style. So what we've got is the CSS information they're used to using on HTML pages that define how it looks. We've got some parameters that describe how to draw it, and then it just has a standard XML ID at the end. It's pretty straightforward. You can get your hands around it pretty quickly. Oh, and SVG stands for scalable vector graphics. Now there's an X in XML, which I think is kind of funny because it actually stands for extensible, which doesn't start with an X at all. But what we do in Inkscape is we extend SVG. Because in XML, we can define a namespace on top of the SVG namespace to add additional features. SVG as a format is a display format. It's not an editor format. So there's certain things that an editor needs to know and keep track of that SVG doesn't support. And so the way we get that feature into the SVG file is we extend it. And we extend it with the Inkscape namespace. And so what this slide's trying to show is that, can I step away from the mic? Is that okay with you guys? Okay, so what this slide's trying to show is that we've got a star. And so when we draw that star in Inkscape, we've got a star, we say, okay, look, I've got 5 points on my star, it's got a spoke of halfway down, this is how far the spoke goes, there's no randomization, it's not rounded. And that's how Inkscape thinks about this star. But in SVG, there's this data, and this is the path data. Anything that can read SVG can read that data and know what to do with it, and they'll draw that star exactly like that. But when you're editing it, you don't want to edit 83.318425. What you want to say is, hey, I want to go up to 6 points on my star. And so Inkscape supports that. And we support that, and we embed that information in the SVG using an Inkscape namespace that we lay over the SVG. So that's what the X and the XML stands for us. It stands for adding the information that we need to make a good editor while still supporting the viewing of the SVG standard so that it can go anywhere. When we work with Inkscape and we start looking at the extensions interface, we're language agnostic. And what we try to do is we provide an interface to use the standard in, standard out. So I just wanted to say that whatever language you like, here's just four you can possibly use. You can bash script, you can use Python, Perl, Ruby, whatever you like. We support that, and we support you. And if you want to use, I don't know, whatever language you're excited about today, yeah, write your extension in that language too. The way extensions are designed is, I've been told this is the bridge architecture, that there's types and there's implementations. So what happens is the types are the way that the extension represents itself to Inkscape. And the implementations is how it actually works. So the types of extensions that we support are input extensions, output extensions, effect extensions, and print extensions. And this is actually the only slide in my presentation that talks about the print extensions because they're significantly more complex and I just couldn't fit them into the presentation. We'll talk a lot about the input, output, and effect extensions. So this is what features that the extension provides to Inkscape. This is how Inkscape looks as an extension. Then we have the implementations, and the implementations are how the extension actually gets done. A lot of them are built on internal code. This is C, C++ code that actually executes the feature that you're trying to create. There's also the scripting interface. And the scripting interface calls an external script. And later in the presentation, we'll go through that scripting interface and talk about how you can build a script that works within Inkscape. Each extension has a type and it has an implementation, though most of that's hidden from the user. Extensions have a interesting, I think, life cycle of how they get created. They get created, they register, and then they just wait. They sit around, they say, hey, user, call me. What do you want me to do? And so if the user comes and says, hey, I want to use this extension, the extension gets loaded, we figure out what the parameters are, we execute it, and then we wait. Now, what's kind of interesting about this is we have these load and unload steps. So if the user doesn't use an extension for a very long time, it will get unloaded. This way we can conserve memory, conserve the amount of resources that Inkscape takes up. But let's say you're just going and you're executing this 1,000 times because that's what you want to do with it. We can just sit here in this loop of wait parameters execute, and use the same extension over and over again without having to go through the unload and load step. So Inkscape optimizes this with an internal timer that actually gets increased every time that it gets called, so that the extensions you use a lot, they're always going to be fast. The extensions that you don't use, they don't waste space. So one of the extensions I talked about was effects. And effects are in the user interface. And under the effects, most of them are under the effects menu. And they allow you to make some sort of translation in the document. Let's say it's adding a drop shadow, changing a color, some action that you want to do on the document. Now, effects are unique in the fact that they have to integrate with the UI very closely. So how do they do that? Well, in Inkscape, we have an architecture using what's called verbs and actions. So every effect creates a verb. And so then that verb, for every document, creates an action. So every time we create a document in Inkscape, we get a set of the actions for what you want to be able to use with that document. And that calls back into the verbs, which are actually what do the work. Well, the verbs, the normal verbs in Inkscape, things like, I don't know, file window close, is a specific amount of code that's stuck in that verb that actually does that action. Well, with extensions, we wanted to be a little more dynamic with that, and so that what that happens is that verb calls back into the effect. And the effect is what actually executes the actions. So as far as an extension developer is concerned, this is all transparent because every effect creates a verb which creates all the actions for you. But as far as the document in Inkscape is concerned is, hey, there's just verbs, and I don't care if they're extensions, I don't care if they're built in, I don't care how the extensions got there. All of that's hidden from the rest of the Inkscape core. So you can kind of see, start to see where this line is drawn between extensions and the core. And the fact that the core really doesn't know about extensions, and extensions don't really know about the core, and they keep away from each other, so that you can create extensions that are powerful, but the core doesn't need to know whether there's an extension or not. So this, I alluded to this on the last slide, but what happens basically when you call effect is the verb gets called because the user says, hey, do this action. That calls the effect, and the effect goes to the implementation. Because the effect is just the type of the extension that we've got, and the implementation is what actually does the work. And so the effect says, okay, implementation, figure out what your parameters are. And the implementation does that in some way. And then it goes, okay, you got your preferences, execute, and do this action on this document right here that I've got right now. And the implementation says, okay, got the document, here's the document. And so it gives the finished document to the effect, who cleans it up, and then returns it to the user. Now, if you look at this slide, you kind of say, well, the effect guy, you know, really all he's doing is calling a couple parameters, and why do I have this effects layer here? It doesn't really make a lot of sense. But actually, this slide simplifies it drastically, because what the effects layer does is it massages the document on both sides. There are a lot of settings and preferences in Inkscape that are changed upon a save, like how the document was saved, what the path was, what the temporary file names were, that the effect extension takes care of hiding from even the implementation. So the implementation doesn't have to deal with things like selections, making sure the same things get selected afterwards that were selected before, making sure that all the parameters that change on saves are still handled correctly. And the effects handles that, so the implementation just has to worry about, what do I want to do to this document, and can I give it back to Inkscape afterwards? The other type of extension that we talked about are the input and output extensions. So what happens in an input and output extension is typically this is done through a file dialog, either a save dialog or an open dialog. So when that dialog comes up, it's got to do a few things to be able to figure out what extensions are available in the system. We did that before on effects using verbs, and the verbs got put in the menus, and we were able to do that just like any other verb in Inkscape. But with the input output, it's slightly different. What happens is the dialog gets created by Inkscape. Inkscape queries the extension database, which keeps track of all the extensions, what their states are, handles the loading and unloading, and it says, hey, give me all the extensions that support what I need to do, usually input or output at the time, all the input extensions. Then it goes to each of those and says, hey, give me information about the types of files you can support. It says, hey, you know, I support PostScript, I support EPS, I support TIFF. Those come back, and it creates the dialog. After the user makes their selections, they choose either to auto-detect or they choose a specific format, then the dialog says, hey, save, extension, handle this for me. And then we have file.io. So the file.io opens a file, calls extension, and then it can display it in Inkscape. This would be for input. But what's interesting about this slide, what becomes very important, is this helper extension slide. Because what we did is we realized pretty early on in Inkscape that you've got tools that convert from one format to another, but not all of those are converting into SVG, which is really what we want at the core of Inkscape. But you know, you could write a bash script to say, chain this tool to that tool to this tool to that tool, come up with SVG at the end. But why isn't Inkscape doing that for you? It's not that hard. And the reality is we want to be able to support PostScript in, we want to be able to support that all these intermediary formats that you've got. So if we have Inkscape handle this for you, then we get support for all those formats that you're putting in that pipeline. That's better for users, right? So what we've done is we've implemented what we call the helper extension. So if you have a tool that takes PostScript and turns it into Ted's favorite format, as long as you have a Ted's favorite format to SVG converter, that means you can open PostScript and you can open Ted's favorite format in Inkscape. When you open PostScript, it goes to Ted's favorite format in the middle, but as far as the user is concerned, they open a PostScript file. This allows a lot of flexibility as a developer because maybe you don't want to support SVG. Maybe you want to support PostScript output. Well, if Inkscape can take in PostScript, who cares? You still can build an extension for Inkscape supporting PostScript. We'll use our PostScript to SVG, however we decided to do that. It may go through 50 formats in the middle, You don't care, because all the things happen is you need to output PostScript, and Inkscape takes care of the rest for you. Don't try to read the slide. So what I wanted to show here is just kind of how the implementation works. And so what happens is there's a class implementation. And then we get all the subclasses for implementing the implementation. So in C++, we get a subclass, and then you only have to implement the functions that you need to implement your implementation. So if you're doing a file I/O, you need to implement one function. If you want to be able to do custom parameters, you implement two functions. C++ takes care of the rest for you. It handles all the virtual functions and handles all the templates for all the other types of functions you could possibly need in an implementation. So in ways, this slide is really hard to read, but also in ways, it shows how simple it is to create an implementation in Inkscape, because all you have to do is implement exactly what you need to do the feature that you want. Everything else is taken care of by the superclass, so hey, just subclass it, and it's pretty easy to do. So to define an extension for Inkscape, what you have to do is create what's called an INX file. An INX file stands for an Inkscape extension. It's a pretty simple XML file that gives the basic parameters about how the extension is used and what to do with it. It starts with the general information, which is things like the name, the ID, information about the developer for the extension. And it talks about the dependencies. I'm not going to go into this a lot, but there's dependency handling in Inkscape that's not, we're not trying to replace apt. We're not trying to replace yum. We're trying to just handle simple dependencies of, some people, not everybody wants to install PS to edit. So we shouldn't make it a dependency to install Inkscape that you have to install PS to edit. Because then, if to install Inkscape, you'd have 1,000 dependencies to load into your system. Well, how can we make Inkscape dynamic enough, but yet still usable? And so we do things like check to see if PS to edit is installed. It's not rocket science. It's not very difficult. We're not checking to make sure that it executes and you didn't install the PowerPC binary on x86 or anything crazy like that. What we're doing is we're just saying, hey, is PS edit there? Is there a file? Okay, we'll assume they did it right if it's there. So it's very simple dependency checking. But what it allows is that Inkscape can be installed on a system that we don't necessarily have to pull every possible dependency that Inkscape would want to use. So the dependencies are simple, but then they provide a lot of functionality for users because Inkscape seems simpler and it just works. You install PS to edit, voila, it works in Inkscape. Then there's parameters. These are the parameters for the extension. They talk about how you can change the extension. A lot of things, this might be like the color. If you want to say, write an extension that says set everything orange, maybe you could add a parameter to set everything blue too, and you can select between orange and blue, because why would you choose any other color? So every type then has information on the type. So effects have a type, input have input, output. This is information that specifies the type. We're going to go into those a little bit more. And lastly, for implementations, for most of the biggest example I'm going to go to here on implementations is going to be on the scripting implementation. But other implementations can also use this area of the INX file to specify information about their implementation. So where do you put the INX files? INX files, by default, can go in user share Inkscape extensions. And this is actually install dependent. Some packages put it in different places. But the most common place for that extensions folder to be is in user share Inkscape extension. Or it can be in your home directory. You can have a tilde Inkscape directory extensions. So if you're developing INX files or developing an extension, just work in your home directory. You don't have to worry about sudo or having root privileges or anything like that. You can just edit the ones in your home directory and work with them. And then when you distribute them to everybody, maybe you want to put them in user share Inkscape extensions. Or if you download an extension from the web that you on a machine that you may not have root privileges on, you can just install it on your home directory, which is kind of a nice feature. So what happens is that all the INX files are read. Regardless of dependencies, regardless of anything, we try to load all the extensions. Then we start going into dependencies and saying, hey, do we have this? Nope, we don't have it. Unload that guy. Well, remember when we talked about the chaining, where we talked about the helper extensions? Well, if I pull one guy out of the middle of the chain, I need to kill everybody else along that chain. So what we do is we go through that and we say, oh, you didn't have this guy. Bum. Oh, we can't do that anymore. So pull that guy out. And so we handle all that dependency resolution to come up with a final set of extensions that this instance of running Inkscape can use.
So for input-output, I only did input here, but output's virtually identical, except it says output instead of input. I hope that is understandable. These are some of the parameters you can give for an input extension. Extension is the file extension that it should use. This is for auto-detection. For both Inkscape input and output, you can say auto-detect. And so if you put .ps, it'll assume PostScript, or whatever is in the extension parameter for the INX file. MIME type, we're not currently using this, but the hopes is when we start switching to GNOME BFS, we can detect MIME type and auto-detect by MIME type also. File type name, this is the name that exists in the file dialog of what the file type is. Usually it would be like PostScript. And then there's a tooltip which provides a longer description of how the whatever the file format is. It may be, you know, PostScript that Al really likes, but using the PS tools version of it. Finally, there's an output extension. This is actually unique to input. When you open a file in Inkscape, and we say, hey, you know, you open a PostScript file, probably the most likely thing you're going to do if you want to save onto that file is you want it to be PostScript also. You open, you work with it, you want to save it back in the same format that it was in. So the output extension says, hey, if I open with this extension, save with that extension. And for some people, that doesn't make a lot of sense, because some people say, hey, well, I'm importing this into Inkscape, and I want to work with an Inkscape. But if you're just going to hit Control-S, you probably don't want it to save an SVG over your .ps file. And so what this does is it protects against that. You can always do save as and change the format or change different extensions. That's not a big deal. But just by default, you hit Control-S, it doesn't ask you, it just tries to do it. Effects. Effects are a little bit simpler, except for the fact that we've got the menu handling. Object type is for future expandability. Currently, it doesn't do anything, but what it does is you can specify what type of objects this effect works on. So some effects would only work, let's say, on rectangles. Well, that will just handle that in the effects object to making sure you don't haven't selected anything besides rectangles. But that's not yet implemented. Then there's the effects menu. And this just adjusts where the effect exists in the menu structure. So if you go to the effects menu, you notice there's submenus. And what you can do is in Inkscape, every effect specifies what submenus it is in, so that whole structure gets built dynamically. And the reason we want to build dynamically is because of all this dependency checking. If I go and I unload a certain extension, how do I rebuild the menus? Well, they just get dropped out. And if I add an extension, I just add it, and the menu gets filled dynamically. And this is exactly how you specify. You just say effects menu. And if you want to do submenus, you just drop the submenus in there, and the effect gets dropped into the submenus. Parameters. When you specify in the INX file the parameters, there's a bunch of different types you can use. I'm not going to go into all of them, except to say there's a long list of them. And if you're using a script, we do something called auto-GUI, which means we take the parameters and we make them all of it have the ability to be set by the user. So when the user runs the effect, or the input, or the output extension, it pops up a dialog and says, okay, here's all the parameters. Here's my little test function that says parameter 1, parameter 2, these are both integers. Parameter 3 is a string, an enum. And so the user can set all those values, and then those values get passed to the script. And we'll talk about how those values get passed later. But what this means is that you can put user-specifiable things without knowing anything about GUI programming. You can just say, hey, I need an integer. This integer's got to have a range of 0 to 10. The default value is 5. Boom. There's a GUI already generated for you. Now, it's not a complex GUI. It's not a great GUI. It probably violates every user interface specification known to man. But it's a GUI. And it makes it very easy for extensions developers to allow their programs to be flexible, add parameters to them. And that's a very powerful thing, because a lot of people don't have GUI development experience. And so we can provide that quickly and easily. Internationalization. In America, I guess we don't talk about this much, because everybody only speaks one language, right? But internationalization becomes a big issue when you're talking about a program that needs to go overseas and is developed. We're working with people who don't necessarily speak English. I hear there are some. They're mostly immigrants, I think. But in the INX files, what we've done is we allow you to specify underscore on the element name. You're going to say underscore my element, any of the elements in the INX file. Or you can say, for the attributes, just put an underscore before the attribute name. what happens then is we've got get text set up, because we put it in, when you put the file in the profiles.in for get text, we can specify and say, hey, this is an XML file. Those get pulled in, they get translated in the same way the translators translate every other string in Inkscape, and you get a fully internationalized UI. In Inkscape 0.4.5, which we just released a couple weeks ago, we had, I think it was 15 languages that were over 90% complete, which I think is pretty impressive. And that includes all the extensions. There were 71 INX files with extensions, and all of those were translated. I think that's really cool. Internal extensions. I've talked a little bit about why you can do that internally, and obviously you don't have an INX file when it's all built in. And the real simple way to do that is you just call extension build from memory, and you basically build the INX file as a string. The one key things, two key things I wanted to point out is so the internationalization is in underscore instead of doing it the other way. That's how get text normally works. I don't know if you've worked with get text before. And lastly, the implementation just becomes an instantiation of the class. So now I want to talk a little bit about scripting interface and the command line. And this is probably the simplest slide, and yet it's my favorite because it is so simple. Basically what happens is you're creating a script, and that script gets called by Inkscape. But as far as the extension developer, the scripter, has to think about it, this is all they have to think about. They have to think about, I'm going to get my command called, I'm going to get an SVG name specified, and I output standard out. That's not the end of the world. That sounds pretty easy. It sounds like you could be writing Inkscape code. Well, I expect at least before the BOF we get a few contributions. So what happens to these parameters that we talked about earlier? Because you want to be able to set the parameters, you want to be able to use them. So how do they get back to my program? They become command line options. So if you said my parameter name was value 1, you get minus minus value 1 with a value to it. Value 2 is the same. You put a million parameters there, well, I think Bash limits it to 32,000 characters. So don't put a million parameters there. But Inkscape will keep concatenating them until we run out of space. This is the same thing with selected objects, because a lot of times you want your effect to interact with the objects that are selected on the document. So how do you know what is selected? Well, in XML, it specifies that every object should have an ID, and Inkscape does that religiously. So it's always going to put an ID on every document, every element in the document. Here we've got to see a rectangle with ID rect0323. So then when you call the extension, the same thing happens. You get my command minus minus ID equals rectangle 0321. It's pretty straightforward. That you can go through, write an XPath extension just to pull that out and use it directly. Well, I'm always going to have errors. What if those users select the wrong thing? How do I tell them they're stupid? Well, we even got a solution for that. You can output the standard error. And so we take the standard error output and we provide it to the user. Well, I don't necessarily know what they're always going to do with it, but we're going to provide them standard error output. But what's neat about this dialogue, and I think this shows a little bit of ingenuity on our part, is that we put the standard error here in a box. This box you can cut and paste out of into a bug. Yeah. I don't know how many error dialogues you've seen where you open up the error dialogue and it's like, oh, I need to write this down. And you're sitting there copying down the entire error dialogue. That's a bad idea. So what we did is we put it in there so you could cut and paste it out. And as you as a developer, someone calls you and say, hey, it's broken. Hey, cut and paste the error message and give it to me. Try that one. They won't expect it, I swear. There's also helper libraries. And this is an example. Probably the best example is inkx.py. And this is a Python extension library that handles a lot of the scripting interface we've just talked about for you. What it does is it takes in the file, it puts it into the standard PyXML DOM, it handles all parameters. You can just say, hey, what's this parameter? And it takes care of that code for you. So what you could do is just do the same type of thing. We subclass an effect class. It uses the XPath, so you can say, hey, give me all the selected objects, and it'll just do that for you. So if you're writing extensions in Python, I'd really recommend using the inkx.py library, where you can just quickly extend that library to build the extension. And there's a lot of examples of that in the Inkscape repository. The implementation section of an INX file. It's real simple. You say it's a script. Here's the command I want to do.
And here's your command.
There's two interesting parameters. One's the relative directory. You can specify probably the only thing you really want to put here is extensions, because that means it looks in the extensions directory for your script. That's probably where you want to have it. You can specify other directories there. You can specify search paths that you want to use, but 99% of the time you do want this value to be extensions. You can also specify an interpreter. This is typically, if it's a Python, Python, Ruby, Ruby, Perl, Perl, Bash, Bash, type of thing. And what this does is, it's not as big an effect on Linux, but when we run the extensions on Windows, it allows us to understand what you're trying to do, which actually becomes really important on Windows, because things get installed in really goofy places on Windows. So if the more Inkscape can know about what you're trying to do, the better we can try to help. So the interpreter section just basically lets us try to help you. So if it says Python, usually in the Inkscape installs now, we install our own Python because we had too much trouble finding the other one. So we use our own, and that allows us to override the command line to use our own Python. If you don't put it in there, we won't do anything. Good luck. So as I talked about the extensions, I said, hey, what we really want to do is we want to allow people to enter the community of Inkscape. And the Inkscape community is very friendly, but the code bases can be, well, it really is kind of intimidating. I mean, in 0.4.5, we shipped almost 500,000 lines of code. That's a lot of code. You don't read 500,000 lines of code in a weekend, and you definitely don't understand it. It takes a month probably to contribute to the core of Inkscape, of just listening to the mailing list, talking to people, trying to figure out what you want to do, and getting your head around it. It's not easy. And the reality is, in open source projects, you don't want to have a month for every contribution that's going to come in. People are going to get bored. They're going to lose their attention. So what we want to do is, we want to have some way that they can quickly get involved in Inkscape, get their hands wet, and start to say, hey, this is really cool. This is something I enjoy doing. Man, I'd really like to know more about the core. So you kind of think of Inkscape extensions as the starter drug before we get you into the harder stuff. But that's kind of the goal also, because we do end up with a lot of contributions that someone comes in and says, hey, here's four things that I think is really cool. This is my itch. I scratched it. Now I'm going to go scratch my itch somewhere else. And this allows people to go do that. As an interesting example, that doesn't even include all the libraries. But the inkx Python file is 174 lines. I'm quite sure you could master, if you understood Python, which I don't, 174 lines pretty quickly. So because of this, we can see growing use of extensions in Inkscape. This is the number of INX files in every Inkscape release that we've released, from 0.35, which had no INX files, to 0.45, which has 71. And you can just see how we've steadily grown this feature. We've started to use more extensions in Inkscape, and I don't expect this trend to do anything but go up, because they're very useful. We're getting more contributions. I think it's a very powerful thing in Inkscape.
What mechanism does the project have? You just mentioned one of the problems with Firefox extensions, is that people, whip up a really great extension and then it doesn't work with a later version of Firefox. How is Inkscape going to deal with somebody whips up a really great extension but it doesn't quite work with new releases?
We haven't dealt with that yet, to be entirely honest. So I can't say how we will deal with it, 100% how we will deal with it. But because the extensions, the key interface between Inkscape and the extension is SVG. So as long as they support SVG and we support SVG, unless one of us is doing it wrong, there's a right answer there. So I don't see that as a huge problem, because we're not effectively changing that interface that much. Now, we try to be SVG compliant. I'm sure that someday we'll find a place where we're not SVG compliant. So we may break an extension if we fix that SVG compliance that we messed up. But I think that's going to be a rare case, not the more common case. So one of the neat changes for me, and I actually when I started putting this talk together, I was looking at different extensions, and I said, how are people using extensions? And one thing we talked about is, all the extensions are basically in the Inkscape tarball. That's no longer the case. I started looking around, and I found extensions everywhere, where people were saying, hey, I ripped this up, here's my extension, it's on my blog, download this inkx file and throw it in here, and then you can go ahead and do this, and you have an extension, which I think is fabulous. I just didn't realize that it had gotten to that point.
And so now you can get Inkscape extensions that aren't bundled with Inkscape, which is, at least for me, is who's been with us a long time, that's just crazy cool. But what we need to do now is start consolidating. And when we discover one on a blog that's a really nice one, we need to make sure that it gets into Inkscape. And that's our job, and that'll be a continuing mission forever. But right now, that's just a neat change where people aren't saying, I have to be an Inkscape contributor to write an Inkscape extension. And that was never the case, but intellectually, people saying, hey, I can just throw things and I can get features, that's really neat. So one of the extension projects that I want to talk about was our Google Summer of Code this summer. It worked with Miklos, and he did PDF export for us. It unfortunately didn't make it into the 4.5 release. But one of the things that was interesting is when I started working with him, I said, hey, you know, this extensions interface, it's great. You might have noticed that I'm a fan of it. And he said, well, you know, I really want to just, can we do it this way? And I said, you know, look at it. Try the extensions interface. Trust me, you're going to like it. And I think this quote shows that he said, hey, you know, what you've got is a really good idea. I can use this to extend the way Inkscape works and make this PDF a lot faster. And so here's someone who's been there, and I just wanted to say this is a, you know, I'm not the only person who thinks this is a good idea. There's at least one person that I pulled off the internet. Another developer who started with the Inkscape extensions and actually wrote the inkx.py is Aaron Spike. Aaron, just like probably many of you in the room, thought, hey, there's a cool thing I could write in Inkscape. And he wrote Inkscape extensions. Eventually he abstracted those in inkx. And now he's actually contributing core features to Inkscape. So I use this as a proof of my theory that this is the starter drug, and we'll get you all into the core eventually. And Aaron Spike is an example of that. This is the logo. This is the logo he made for his website. It's kind of an S. He did that by hand in Notepad.
That's just sick.
I know. I still can't believe it. Another example of using Inkscape extensions is this program, Xmodo. And I'm not a big BMX person, but this is a BMX simulation. It's cross-platform. You can play like you're a BMX rider. And what they did is they had a level editor because they want to be able to have users create levels. And it was okay. But then they started to realize that that wasn't really where they wanted to go. They wanted a more powerful tool. And so what they did is they built an Inkscape extension package. I think it's 20 or 30 extensions on Inkscape. You plug into Inkscape, and then Inkscape becomes the level editor for this Xmodo game. And so you can draw using all the Inkscape tools, define the dirt or sky or whatever they define in Xmodo, and use that to create Xmodo levels. You can just click an Inkscape, do file save, it does an output extension, and saves as an Xmodo level file. The one thing they don't have is you can't read in level files, but that's supposed to be in the next release. So I think that's a very exciting use of Inkscape, where they've repurposed Inkscape using Inkscape extensions to be an entirely different purpose than, you know, when we started Inkscape, I can guarantee you the BMX simulation level editor was not on the list of goals. So where are we going next? What's kind of the next ideas that we're going to start doing with Inkscape? One of the big things is DOM scripting. If you're familiar with the W3 standards, there's the document object model, which allows you to add the in-memory model of the SVG document. We're planning to support that in Inkscape. That allows for extensions that work on the direct model in Inkscape. So that means they should be much faster. They can use the memory directly in Inkscape to edit the document and use Inkscape features to do so. This provides more functionality as extensions, but unfortunately it's not done yet. XSLT, and we're using XML. What's the next letter you should use? S. So XSLT is a way to translate XML files. We're planning to support XSLT as being an extension type in the future. It just makes sense, really, is what it comes down to. We just haven't done it yet. Oh, the other thing to note about XSLT is there's a lot of XSLT scripts out of there. If you're looking at using SVG and you're thinking, hey, you know, this SVG thing looks cool, you might look around. There's like the Visio XML format. There's an XSLT script to turn that into SVG if you're looking for like a Visio to SVG converter, you need to use it in Inkscape. So we want to be able to go file open the Visio XML file format and open it. And to do that, we need XSLT. The other thing is that we'd like to, as a type of extension, be able to support tools. Currently, all the tools that are in Inkscape require being built into the core of Inkscape. And so that's okay, because we don't have that many tools. But we'd like to be able to provide that level of functionality to extension developers in the future. So that's one of our next targets, is tools.
Another goal is to do path effects. I like to call these brushes, but everyone gets angry at me when I call them brushes. They're path effects. And the idea of path effects is to take a standard path and turn it into something a little bit more stylized. Maybe you want to be able to do rope drawing, and so when you draw, it looks like rope. Well, that would be something you could do with a path effect and adjust the parameters as you draw it. This is using the calligraphy tool, which doesn't use that today, but would be a candidate for using in the future. Let's say you wanted to use a brush instead of the calligraphy tool, you could use a brush. Yeah?
Did you see the pattern on path in 4
yep.
or 5?
Okay. Yep. It would be very similar to that, but except you could draw it and edit the parameters on the fly.
And that was the thing, I was going to say, that they were using that as a basis.
Yep.
For
exactly.
Doing that fly.
Yep, that's the goal. So it'll be a neat effect. If you can use in 045, there's an extension to do pattern on path, where you can select a pattern and put it on along a path. But this would allow it to do live and also allow you to adjust the path afterwards with that pattern applied to it, which is just a much better user experience than having to run the effect every time. All the information. You probably, if you want to know more, there's more information on the internet. Here's some places that might actually provide information you're looking for on the internet. There's the Inkscape website, which is inkscape.org. We have all the documentation on there, including the Doxygen documentation, including the user manual, including all the source code, if you really want to get your hands dirty. The SVG spec is on the w3.org site, which is the W3C site, w3.org/trsvg. Open Clipart, I talked about earlier. They have lots and lots of Clipart. Even if you don't like Inkscape and you hate me because of this speech, you should go to Open Clipart anyway and use their Clipart. And lastly, that's where the presentation is. At Scale, we've got a booth downstairs. We're in booth slot number 12. You can come by. We have an Inkscape demo running. You'll play with Inkscape, see if you like it. We've got a Birds of a Feather at 7 o'clock, which we're going to just talk more about Inkscape. We've got some neat examples of using Inkscape that I think people like. And then after the BFF, we're all going to go to El Segundo Fresh Fish Company. You're welcome to come meet with us. It's in El Segundo. There'll be information at the BOF. And questions? Yeah?
Do you have an IRC channel too?
We do. It's the information on the website, I don't remember the name of it. But it also has a Jabber gateway, so I normally connect to the Jabber clients.
It's on Freenode.
Freenode?
It's pounding scale.
Freenode pounding scale.
Are you there enough?
I'm usually in the Jabber side, but they're connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It's XML. We have to be on the Jabber side, right?
Do you want to talk more to a newbie about adding a tool?
Oh, yeah, and there's a user list also. Not for adding a tool, but if you're worried about using Inkscape, there's the Inkscape user list.
The usability is fine.
Yeah.
I don't have complaints. It's pretty intuitive.
Well, I think the user list is also interesting for people who are using Inkscape because a lot of times they discuss technique and they say, you know, I'm trying to do this, but this is a really hard way to do it. Yeah.
I'm just trying to support one.
Cool. So everything else was self-explanatory? Wow. I think that's the first time that's ever happened.
You said it'd be easy. I'm sorry, I missed the first half of your talk, so I hope this question is redundant. But did you talk about that before?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you discuss
the question is about import. Yeah, we discussed input extensions. It's pretty much the same thing, except slightly different parameters. What you can do is just create the same script, but you output to standard out as an SVG file. And the interesting part was that you can actually loop and connect extensions together, so you don't always have to output SVG as long as you output a format that Inkscape can take in.
I heard somewhere that you could have two people working on the same drawing at the same time.
Yes. What we do is we support a tool interface called Inkboard, and it actually uses Jabber Chat to allow people to share a document and work on it simultaneously. I don't believe it's compiled in by default in 0.4.5, but it will be in the future. The big problem we're having right now is the Jabber servers hate us. Because the problem is the Jabber servers use what's called karma. And what that means is that they say, hey, this guy's chatting more than is reasonable for a human to chat. I'm going to slow their connection down, which is entirely correct. But when we're using Inkscape for that, the reasonable amount of data is different. And so the Jabber servers kind of kill us with their karma right now. And so we're working with them to try to come up with solutions to allow Inkboard to connect over them. But it works pretty well. If you're willing to set up your own Jabber server and turn off karma, you can edit with two documents. And it also supports multi-room chat, so you can have 10 people in the same room editing the same document.
Are are people really doing extensions in Bash? Do they have anything like the Ajax
to buy? I've seen some pretty complex Bash scripts. I think they call other stuff, though.
XML tools.
Exactly. So I don't know of anyone who's done an entire extension in Bash, but if you want to, I'm not going to stop you. Cool. Well, thank you for everyone for showing up. I hope you enjoyed it.
Before you leave, excuse me, there is an evaluation form right in the back. We would appreciate your feedback on this talk. Thank you.